folklore flourishes among families, communities, social and occupational groups. One occupation we see today that exhibits a wide range of traditions is the seafaring life of commercial fishermen. Through the ages, the sea has been uniquely linked to the creation and preservation of folklore, perhaps a consequence of the danger and mystery it represents. Folklore, no matter where it's found, plays a role that is important to the group that sustains it. Florida has over 7,000 miles of coastline and supports one of the largest commercial. Folklore flourishes among families, communities, social and occupational groups. One occupation we see today that exhibits a wide range of traditions is the seafaring life of commercial fishermen. Through the ages, the sea has been uniquely linked to the creation and preservation of folklore, perhaps a consequence of the danger and mystery it represents. Folklore, no matter where it's found, plays a role that is important to the group that sustains it. Florida has over 7,000 miles of coastline and supports one of the largest commercial fishing industries in the nation. Fishing has been a natural way of life for Floridians since the time of the first settlers, the Timaquan Indians. Coastal and river communities continue to depend upon seafood and fish as a livelihood and a way of life. Fishing communities are found throughout the state of Florida. One such community is Fernandina Beach on the northeast coast of Florida. Fernandina Beach is credited as being the birthplace of the commercial shrimping industry, and it now supports an annual seafood industry worth $500,000. It involves 350 fishermen and 7 shrimp and fish packing houses. Prior to 1900, Fernandina was noted for its lumber trade, sending Florida yellow pine over the sea in large sailing vessels. At this time, the shrimp harvest was caught by cast netting off Amelia Island. The total catch for a night was about 450 bushels. The shrimp were boiled, dried, and sent to New York City, Philadelphia, and Savannah. It was not until 1909 when a marked change occurred in shrimp production. The first power-driven shrimp boat replaced cast nets and rowboats as the norm and opened up the world of offshore shrimping. At the turn of the century, shrimp sold for a nickel a pound and were given away free in New York City bars. Today, shrimp cost over $5 per pound, and a shrimper's investment can be over $250,000 to buy boat, nets, gear, tackle, insurance, and diesel fuel. Although prices fluctuate, shrimping as a way of life is basically unchanged, handed down from father to son. One young man who grew up shrimping in Fernandina is David Cook, the owner of Captain Daddy. We see David and his two crew hands, locally called strikers, as they embark at night to fish for the brown shrimp in the waters off Fernandina.
My name is David Emmett Cook, Jr. I was born in Fernandina Beach, January 12, 1949. My grandfather was here. I guess he's been here for all his life, and as far as I know, he's been right in this area all his life. They call him D.A. Cook. My father, he's been doing shrimping all his life. He still lives here. He was born in Fernandina, and he's 54 years old now. He's still shrimping. His father taught him, and my father taught me. Just passed right on down. Well, when I used to fish with my father, I always have liked it, liked the water and liked shrimping and fishing part of it, and I like to be outdoors, and I just like the type of work. I guess about 15, 16 when I really decided, you know, that's what I wanted to do. Yeah, well, I started working, you know, like I say, with him, and then finally I got the opportunity to get me a boat, and I took the opportunity, and which I've only had a boat there now for, I guess, since 1975 is when I bought my first boat, and been on my own boat since then. They used to use lead lines, and where we use chain on our nets now, and they used old wooden, old corks on the nets, and we used this new plastic type corks, and the power has changed. They used gasoline engines back in those days. We've gone to diesel engines now, and the size of the boats, and they used to pull one rig back then, and now we pull two rigs. And it's just changed. It changed with the times. The basics is still the same. It's just the application is a little different. Everybody's got their own style net they pull. Some use balloon nets, some use flat nets, some use a box net, some use mongoose, some use all different kinds, you know. It depends on what the person wants to pull. Well, we've used these for years, and they seem to work better.
Although some methods of shrimping have changed over the years, parts of the seafaring life never change, especially superstitions.
Well, a lot of people, a lot of the fellas, they get superstitious if you turn the hatch upside down, and if you go fishing on a Friday or start a trip on a Friday or have a certain kind of food on your boat, or if you say certain words on your boat, on their boat, and they are real superstitious. I don't know, some people say bananas is bad to have on a boat, and some people say if you turn your hatch upside down, and other people have, if you have a gourd on your boat, or say alligator or anything like that.
Other superstitions common in Fernandina are: when you sing or whistle on a shrimp boat, that's hard luck. Always put your left foot on shore first. Women and dogs are a jinx on a boat. To bring a black suitcase on board is hard luck. Fishermen, like farmers, are dependent on the weather for their livelihood. Because of this fact, a great many weather beliefs have been handed down in tradition.
Yeah, during the certain cloud forms and during the wintertime, it depends on how red the sunset is and the way the sun rises and the birds and the way they act. And first one thing, you can kind of, if you pay enough attention to it, you'll figure out that it's going to blow, or it's going to be calm, or it's going to be foggy, or things like this. If it sets real dark red, it's going to be some bad cold weather.
The weather is the main factor in where, say, if you got a west wind blowing 2 days, the shrimp get right up on the beach. Or if it blows out the east, a shrimp works into the wind. And if it's a northeaster, they work up against the shoals. And if you get a northeast wind blowing with a, that means you can get to them. That means you can do it better with a light northeast wind blowing. Now, southeast wind, they disappear. You can't do nothing. That's the only bad winds, a southeaster. But a southwest, west wind, or a nor'wester, or a nor'easter, you know, it usually do pretty good. Northeast is the best, and a nor'wester, and a southeast is the worst. And it's according to tide and moon, like I say. On white shrimp, on a good full moon, is the right time to catch white shrimp. But on brownies, the darker the night, the more shrimp.
Tall tales have been part of the fisherman's lore for centuries. Today, we call a bold exaggeration a good fish story, and speak of the one that got away. Tall tales may get their start from a true experience story that gets handed down within a community, adding details and flourishes in narrative with each telling. One tale that is common in Fernandina is the story of the strangest catch.
Well, I've caught about everything there is to catch except for a mermaid. I've caught an ice box, caught a car, caught a washer and a dryer, and let's see, I've caught even refrigerators. I even caught parts of an old sailing schooner, which we caught off of Sebastian Inlet. Yeah, we've caught lots of fish, all sorts of varmints, and caught an airplane and bombs. We even once caught a skeleton, but we had to throw it back overboard. They're bad luck. Well, I reckon the funniest thing we've ever caught was a submarine. And it scared me and my crew just plumb to death.
Well, the strangest catch would probably be a submarine. An actual submarine in somebody's net started towing the boat backwards, almost sinking the boat. Didn't even realize they had the shrimp boat caught. It was not a Navy submarine. It was a Russian submarine. And they didn't even... Well, it was off of this coast, yeah. They didn't even realize that they had the submarine in the net at first. They were towing one way, and all of a sudden they started going backwards. And the cable popped. And just a little while later, they saw the submarine surface with a shrimp net on top of him. So... I guess I'd say that was the weirdest catch.
Superstitions, tall tales, foodways, beliefs, and traditional skills and knowledge are interwoven into a shrimper's life. At the Standard Hardware store down the road from David Cook's shrimp house, another young man is carrying on a family tradition. Billy Burbank III, a third-generation net maker working with his father and two brothers.
My name is Billy Burbank III. I was born in Fernandina Beach, Florida, in October 2nd, 1951. My grandfather was born on Cumberland Island, which is in Georgia, and he started shrimping all back in his early years when he was 15, 16 years old, and got into the shrimp business and just started shrimping and started making his own nets. And when his net seemed to outproduce everybody else's nets, then everybody decided to get him to make their nets. And then that's where we got started in the net business about 1915, and been in it ever since. That's all he did at the very start, but when he started making other people's nets, then that's when the variations came in, because everybody wanted something different. So from that period on, you know, we're into I don't know how many patterns now. You just couldn't name them all, but you know, I make a total of maybe 120 something different patterns, you know, styles for people. Well, let's see, I started myself, I guess, actual working when I was 11 years old. That's when I seen my mother doing it, and I said, well, heck, if she can do it, I can do it. So I jumped in there and, you know, finally started learning from then on.
Billy begins his net by cutting nylon webbing to size and then sewing the pattern pieces together.
Well, the tools that we use are basically simple, just a small 6-inch cutting knife, which we use, which we import from Sweden, and just a little small wooden handle knife, about 6 inches long. And we use what they call needles or shuttles, which the thread is wound on, and this is what we do our sewing with. It's just a figure eight knots, all of this. We use, most of the knots we use in the shop are figure eights, granny knots, square knot, and a rolling half hitch, what they call it. There's no way a machine can manipulate the stitches the way, you know, our hand sewers can, because there's so many little things, flaws in the webbing, for example, that have to stop to be patched or repaired as you're making a net, that a machine would just go right on through it. Just, and another thing too, it takes a machine 8 hours to make one bale of webbing that I use, and I can cut up probably 3 to 4 bales in one day. So it goes to show you how slow a machine is compared to one person. Plus, I don't think there's no other net making family around that has as many of its own relatives in the business that we do, and we really gung-ho at it, you know. I guess you could say our family's probably some of the fastest sewers there is. You know, we haven't found anybody out sew us yet, so. It would have been a dying art if somebody, you know, that's the trouble with all these other net makers. They have no one to teach it to, and they're steadily dying out, all of the older people.
The colorful bag with its confetti-like chafing gear is added last. This will hold the catch. Finally, the net is treated with polyvinyl paint to protect it from weathering and hung to dry. The Burbanks sell their nets all over the world and are noted as fine craftsmen, having designed several net patterns themselves.
I'm finding out more and more in the shrimp business that it's just like the shoe business. No matter what you do, everybody's got to have something different. And you can't please everybody with one net, and that's a fact.
Although many people fear that folk culture and traditional values are dying, young people like Billy Burbank and David Cook are keeping a part of Florida folk life alive, as it modifies and expands in our contemporary society.